This morning I want to continue my sermon series on our seven Unitarian Universalist principles, focusing today on the second principle, justice, equity, and compassion in human relations. Now, the UU principles did not arise out of nothing, ex nihilo, as theologians say. On the contrary, they were an attempt in the early to mid-1980s to update earlier UU covenants in more gender-free, universalistic language, to modernize the language, as it were, while maintaining the spirit of our Unitarian and Universalist forebears. Now, one of the more recent and poetic of those earlier covenants was a 1935 Universalist avowal of faith, which included, for instance, among those avowals, the power of persons of goodwill and sacrificial spirit to overcome evil. This 1935 covenant was itself a reformulation of earlier statements going all the way back to 1790. But in fact, 1985, 1935, 1790, all these declarations of faith have their roots way further back than that. They have their roots in the prophetic tradition of the Bible. What I want to do this morning is to uncover those roots, do my best to explain how it is and how it came to be that justice, equity, and compassion matter to Unitarian Universalists, and that longtime committed UUs actually try to live these values. I also want to ask each of you to consider whether the application of more justice, equity, and compassion to balance the overwhelmingly martial values exemplified by our government might not be a good idea. Religion is an organic phenomenon. It keeps changing, growing, evolving. Some people bemoan this and cry for a return to what they call old-time religion. Jerry Falwell, Pat Robertson, and their ilk come to mind, but they are not the only ones. The imams of the Taliban wish for the same thing: rigid adherence to unchanging forms. Such things, of course, are impossible. Freezing religion always means killing it. Like natural language, like any animal or plant, religion is alive, constantly evolving, transforming, and adapting to new situations. This has always been true. That fundamentalists do not like it that way has also always been true. There have always been Jerry Falwells and Pat Robertsons and Talibans. In Jesus' time, such people were called Pharisees, and they gave Jesus unmitigated grief, constantly accusing him of violating the law, that is, the rules of how we do things around here, and we've always done it this way. And if you violate that, it's totally wrong if you're a Pharisee. Pharisees and fundamentalists always miss the point that any living tradition and the spirit of life that it celebrates is constantly, intrinsically in flux. Religions, like everything else that's alive, are spirited or dead. Of Unitarian Universalists, several roots. Surely the deepest and most ancient is in the Bible. Sadly, for some contemporary UUs, the Bible's problematic. Many of us grew up in other traditions or in no tradition at all, and those who grew up in kind of rigid, whatever, Catholic, Protestant, but some faiths where they were all too often told about the Bible and what it meant by some modern-day Pharisee who insisted upon the alleged truths, and they were supposed to think just as he told them. By the time they became Unitarian Universalists, many such folks are more than happy to leave it all behind. And that's kind of unfortunate, because you can throw the baby out with the bathwater. There's a lot in the Bible, especially when one considers how overwhelmingly the Bible has influenced Western culture. It makes sense to me to get to know it, and to know it fairly well. One has to admit, however, that the good book can be pretty bad, complex and confusing, filled with anachronisms, and often incredibly brutal. And yet, despite all of that, the overall story, it seems to me, is uplifting, a myth of growth, renewal, and regeneration, in which new understandings and new ethical virtues are constantly encountered, challenging us to grow. Which is no time, no part of that Bible is more challenging in that way than the prophets. My point is that justice, equity, and compassion aren't intrinsic to human nature. Indeed, they did not appear to have been practiced much at all beyond the family during our long incubation as prehistorical. Nor today are those virtues the cardinal virtues of Eastern tradition that they are among Muslims, Christians, and Jews. Ideas about justice. It's not that Buddhists don't believe in justice. They have a whole different way of understanding it. It all comes down to karma. Justice, it's a function of your own heart. But the socially shared responsibility for justice, that's a totally Western idea. And it first came into Western consciousness during the 8th through 6th centuries BCE. When Hebrew prophets first recognized and articulated these as attributes of a healthy society. The years following the conquest of Canaan had been good ones, leading to the rise of an urban mercantile class, which in turn, over the decades, had led to the economic bifurcation of Hebrew society and a growing inequity and insensitivity among people. It was this condition, economic inequality, to which the prophets spoke with poetic originality. The power and self-evident truthfulness of their words struck a deep chord in Western collective consciousness. Our ancestors gradually came to understand that justice, equity, and compassion were indeed foundational to any healthy, wholesome community or state. Eventually, these values were adopted, and over the centuries, they became the basis of our growing understanding of what amounts to goodness and sacredness and holy. Of course, the Bible is written on a lot of levels. Clearly, the 50 chapters of Genesis, the first book, Adam and Eve, Noah, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, all that, pure myth and only myth. But starting with Exodus and going forward, we find the beginnings of Western history, a history in which, from the beginning, the Hebrews' self-understanding of who and what exactly the God they are worshiping is keeps evolving, keeps changing and growing and expanding, causing them continually to update their idea about God as it gets increasingly more sophisticated. What started out as little more than an all-powerful family God is gradually understood to be, or is it revealed to be, that which we hold or holds us in common, the shared spirit of the tribe. Over the centuries and through the influence of the Hebrew and later more contemporary prophets like Mahatma Gandhi and Martin Luther King, what was once understood as a tribal spirit was universalized to include the spirit of all humanity and beyond that, the spirit of all life. Each of the prophets did their poetic best, each in their own way, to help their contemporaries and to help us today wake up to the value of treating one another fairly and of sharing from our resources. By giving expression to the ideas of justice and equity, the Hebrew prophets were the first of our ancestors to encourage their integration into the fabric of civic life. If God is only to be seen and known in and through encounters with one another, they cry, then we must act well, kindly, and lovingly toward one another. There's a broadly shared misunderstanding that prophecy is predictive of future events. In fact, the predictive element in prophecy is incidental, not primary. It extends the margin of the moral and religious present into a future that is its immediate consequence. In other words, or as an example, if you don't start treating the population fairly, there will soon be hell to pay. If you don't, so the predictive element is, here's the conditions, and if you keep going this way, it's going to be very problematic in this way. The God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and the prophets, is not a static, abstract being, but an active, doing kind of God, fully engaged in history and nature. And to serve such a deity means discerning and honoring its presence by living in covenantal social relationships. That is, by living in right relationship. Religion for the prophets is the response through loyalty, obedience, and trust to the ethical reality of God in our midst at all times. One reason many Unitarian Universalists shy away from the Bible, I think, is that we don't know it very well. We don't think we know it very well. We're often intimidated by fundamentalists who can spout chapter and verse. They know the letter, it's true, but Unitarian Universalist view, our view, has always been trying to understand and to live by the Spirit. So it's like that parable of Jesus in the woman taken in adultery. The Pharisees say, but the letter says she's to be stoned. And Jesus goes, okay, who without the sin, you cast the first stone. Who's going to go there? And their hearts were open enough, or he could open them somehow, that they all skulked away. In that way, most UUs see Jesus actually as another in the line of great prophets, not as anyone supernatural, but rather as an exemplar of what it means and what it looks like to be fully human. Someone so open-minded and full-hearted that he can love without reservation or fear across stereotypes, across class, and across barriers of faith as well. This understanding, as far as I can tell, is pretty much the consensus among UUs. It is also, I believe, the deep understanding at the heart of early Christianity and of every faith tradition. But it is not, sadly, the viewpoint among a lot of Pharisees, including the majority of their televangelistic brethren we most frequently see on television. Throughout my adulthood, I have been astonished to watch especially the political class fall over themselves in line to line up behind Jesus while failing to ever follow his well-known policies for conflict resolution or economic health. Maybe this is for us to do. Remind our leaders, especially the ones who repeatedly quote scripture, what the prophets make clear, that however committed a people are to any martial or any commercial strategy, all such plans are bound ultimately to fail unless and until they are balanced with the religious values of justice, equity, and compassion. It's that simple. In a nutshell, this is how these values of justice, equity, and compassion and human relations entered into and became part of Western culture and part of our UU principles. But what does that mean? How do they call us today to grow as a living tradition? First of all, it seems to me they call us to transcend our individual and tribal consciousness and to embrace a global one, to embrace a global consciousness in which justice, equity, and compassion are more than buzzwords, but are at the heart of our country's political policies. I realize that given the popular anger following the 9/11 attacks, whipped up ever since by advertisement-hungry radio hosts, makes a less bellicose foreign policy unlikely anytime soon. Nevertheless, to heal the causes of terrorism, it seems to me we are going to have to deal with the systemic injustice and inequity and lack of compassion underlying the global economy. That America's 5% of the world's population manages to consume something like 30% of its resources has to be seen as having moral consequences. Recognizing global inequity as contributing to political instability does not condone the use of suicide attacks or other violent means against non-combatants. It does, however, commit us to trying to understand what might motivate such behavior, no matter how criminal. and to encourage balancing our nation's military policies with non-military efforts, and balancing our pursuit of international terrorists with relief for the dispossessed who continue to proliferate in their midst. This is true regarding the administration's harsh immigration policies as well. Refugees the world over are all fleeing desperate third world conditions largely caused by our own first world exploitation. Those of us who understand the prophetic tradition as being alive today have to do our best, it seems to me, to share our views. By expressing them publicly, we may slow down the ever-increasing war footing that our economy rests upon, so clearly evidenced by President Trump's pandering to the evil Saudi Arabian Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman because he's hot to buy lots of our country's military hardware. We also need to increase pressure to offset American militarism with compensatory humanitarian efforts across the world and here in America. Efforts that our faith tells us are the best method, perhaps the only method, to loosen the growing resentment of the desperately poor and disenfranchised everywhere. Sometimes one gets the sense that putting in place more just, equitable, and compassionate policies in itself would not accomplish much in the public sphere. Maybe not at first, I agree. I remember back in 2009 attending a poetry reading in Venice, California by Amiri Baraka, in which the poet answered a question by reminding us that the recently elected Barack Obama had been charged metaphorically to turn this huge battleship around, and that members of the left, from the center left all the way to the communists, should line up behind him and always remember, and this is still true today, it's completely true, the enemy is the extreme right. It's not Bernie Sanders, it's not Elizabeth Warren, it's not any of that. They're more on the same page than the extreme right is. Now, 10 years later, we see that Obama did, step by step, actually accomplish a lot. Things do change. 20 years ago, freedom to marry was a pipe dream. Today, it is the law of the land. And here's something else, something very important. Whether our efforts change public policy or not, they will accomplish a great deal personally for those who work for them. Such efforts, they're what's redemptive in a way. Ultimately, this may be the UU's principle's greatest value, especially now in the midst of ever-increasing gun violence at home, protectionist immigration policies, and experimental military adventuresome overseas. Working for greater justice, equity, and compassion balms our weary souls, offering us peace in our hearts and a growing sense of connection internally in our hearts and externally in our shoulder-to-shoulder solidarity with allies and comrades across the globe in the face of both terror and militarism, and engendering a resonance in each of our own hearts of aligning oneself with the living prophetic tradition at the heart of religion and our UU faith. Let it be so. Amen.